Once again, Effie is not here.
Oh no.
That's out of order, isn't it?
Effie.
He wasn't here in the last episode.
No. I don't think he loves us anymore.
No.
No me gusta.
Well, this might be the end of an era. We might have to get somebody to replace Effie.
That's not a bad idea.
True. In fact, this could turn into a really good thing. So,
oh, yeah.
Who should we get? Who should we try and get for the next episode? The new Effie.
Well, I think the polar opposite of Effie would be someone like Miley Cyrus.
But she talks like a robot.
Yeah. She'd be very friendly, bubbly, positive.
Yeah. I think... We should get Danny Trejo in his role as Machete from the film.
Oh. I've not seen it.
It's just like Effie, but he's got longer hair.
Did Effie watch that film at an impressionable age?
Yeah, 45.
Go on, John. Any ideas that we should get?
No.
How about the Queen? She'd be a lot of fun.
She'd be nice, yeah. Just sat in the corner with her scepter and her crown. And,
We could ask her to go and get the tea.
Yeah.
What distribution does she use?
She makes a great cup of tea, though.
Yeah, what distribution does the Queen use?
Queenix.
I like the Queen. I didn't vote for her, but I do like her.
It'd be Kubuntu, wouldn't it? The Q.
Well, listeners, if you could contact all of those people and try and get them to start on our show, we'd be really, really grateful. But in the meantime, we'll struggle on without Effie. This is Season 3, Episode 9 of the Tux Radar Podcast. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
Brilliant. And in this episode, we'll be talking about Fedora 15's release, Linux kernel versioning number shenanigans, we've got our discoveries of the week, You Dare Us, the IRC chat, and of course, Speak Your Brains. If you love this podcast, you will completely, totally love our magazine that we work on so hard every month, Linux format, 114 pages of Linux goodness every month.
Yeah, it's soon to go up.
Ah.
More pages, even more pages.
114 plus 16. What could that number possibly be?
I can't count that far.
Let me get my smartphone out in 7 minutes.
And a 4 GB or even sometimes 8 GB DVD. So it's brilliant. Well, that's what we think. And you can subscribe at tuxradar.com/subscribe.
Awesome work, Mike.
So, straight into the news then. Fedora 15 has been released, of course.
Hooray!
Just a few days ago.
That's brilliant. Well done.
What is this one called?
Jaunty.
Manky Monkey. Well,
I don't know.
I don't know what it's called either.
It's called Fedora 15, let's face it.
Yeah. It has a name.
Yeah, we often talk about it, but I haven't had the chance to Google it.
They were wanting Fedora 16. There was a campaign to try and get it to be called the Beefy Miracle, I think.
The Beefy Miracle?
Yeah. This is serious. There was posts, hundreds of posts on Planet Fedora about it.
Oh, I thought you meant like a 4chan campaign or something.
No. That would be funny.
Yeah. Now that gives me an idea. Meanwhile, so the highlights of this release are, of course, GNOME 3. So like every other distro switching GNOME 3, this is a huge, massive revolutionary change.
Is this the first major distribution to come with GNOME 3?
Well, I think so. Mm. It's the first top tier distro. So this is going to be a lot of people's first exposure to the new desktop.
I will try it because my GNOME shell experience has been pretty poor so far. It'd be interesting to see if Fedora's famous emphasis on stability and usability passes through to GNOME shell, because surely it must.
Well, they've had a bit more time to work on it than the earliest batch of distros that came out with GNOME shell, you know, the day after it was released, and they all scrambled to update, whereas it's been out for a few weeks now, possibly a month or so.
Yeah.
And therefore Fedora's had a bit of time to fix some of the bugs like John's come across with Windows jumping around across multi-monitor setups.
It's not fixed.
Well, never mind.
So long as you don't use it on multiple monitors, GNOME shell is pretty great.
And when it is on multiple monitors, how does it work? I mean,
with the primary monitor is the only one with multiple workspaces, and the secondary monitor is just static. So no matter what workspace the other monitor's on, it's just an extra screen.
Right. So
it works pretty well. It's intuitive. It makes sense.
So there's no title bar or anything
No title bar. Just you can drag your windows over there and they'll stick there. And
from any workspace?
Yeah.
That's not a bad way.
It works. It makes sense, and it's easy.
It's like one of the default Zinorama modes from a long time ago. It's like the easiest option when you add the configuration.
It works. It's just simple and sensible. Yeah, I like it.
Mm.
And yeah. Like on Fedora 15 as well, name shall not be any massive change in this release. They've also introduced systemd.
They have, haven't they?
Oh, that took a long time.
Yeah, they wanted to do that in early releases, yeah, didn't
did they?
Yeah.
I don't know how long systemd's been going for, but it is in there as default now.
Well, it's over a year.
Is it? Yeah. But yeah. It is now. Fedora 15 is the first distribution with it by default. I
wonder if it makes a difference.
Apparently it does.
What, as in faster boot?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Two major changes in one release.
Well, yes, and they've got there's another one actually as well, that they've moved to a different device naming system for Ethernet devices, because it used to be the case that you'd have like ETH0 or F1,
yeah,
but those could be different each time you booted up, depending on, you know, how the BIOS responded.
Yeah.
It ended up quite arbitrary. So they've got a new system where you can always be guaranteed that your Ethernet device is at a certain device node.
Now, but they don't use ETH0 and F1 anymore, do they?
No, they don't. So, you know, your tutorials written for that will not necessarily work on others and things. So it's a bit more fragmentation in Linux. But at the same time, if it works really well, hopefully other distros will start using it. And
it sounds very similar to UUIDs for hard drives and hard drive mounting. And that hasn't been a great success. There are a lot of people who complain that they go back to the old way of mounting things in FSTAB and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And even I get confused. I can never remember the command that displays the UUID for a certain device and go back to probing whatever I've just plugged in through file log messages.
Yeah, if file log messages exist. Yeah,
that's true.
It doesn't in the latest Ubuntu release. But yeah, so that's quite a big change as well. Then there's LibreOffice, and they've got the dynamic firewall, so you can make changes to your firewall without having to restart the whole caboodle.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And PowerTop as well, that system monitor that looks for power consumption.
Well, Intel started it, didn't they?
Yeah. So what are they doing? Cool. What are they doing with it in the release?
I don't know. It's just in there, yeah.
So it's like top.
Yeah.
But it includes what wattage figures.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
It tells you like how many processor wake-ups per second on different processors, so then you can shut them down. Or
it was a bit tricky to get running before, wasn't
it?
You needed to compile a kernel module and that kind of thing. It wasn't hard, but also I thought it only worked on Intel processors. But that's when I last looked at it a couple of years ago.
It may do it. I mean, it may still only be in the 686 version of Fedora. But it's pretty cool nonetheless. So a lot of good stuff there to try out.
So without having tried Fedora 15, all these big changes, do we think that it's a release to skip, depending on how brave you are?
Well, Fedora's always been pretty bleeding edge, hasn't it?
Yeah, these are pretty major.
It sounds quite good to me.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because I quite like most of those things sound like improvements.
They sound really great, but I just wonder how stable they're going to be for six months.
That's the big problem, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot to do in 6 months.
Yeah.
Like one release cycle.
Oh, yeah. If I was rolling out Fedora on corporate desktops, I'd wait for the next version when a lot of these things would have settled more. But I think, you know, for us type of geeks, it's all worth using.
Yeah, definitely.
It's bleeding edge technology.
And also, if Ubuntu with Unity is going to crash anyway...
Oh, what on earth?
Effie has just walked in. You're soaking.
He doesn't have a microphone.
With rage.
Is it raining? Is it slightly raining out there?
It's not just that, it's the fact that it took me an hour and 15 minutes to get from Lansdowne to here because of the public transport.
Don't use public transport.
That's why I cycle.
El transporte público, no es bueno.
Transporte público en Inglaterra es pésimo.
That's exactly what we said when we started this show, and we asked ourselves, what would Effie say?
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Effie. we were just talking about Fedora.
Yeah. Isn't it awesome?
I don't know, I haven't used it.
No,
yet.
None of us have actually used it. Oh, hang on, I was saying something.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Ubuntu, it doesn't have a big bunch of cutting-edge cool stuff, but it does make my machine crash. Mm. So, if crashiness is a given...
But Unity.
Yes, Unity. It makes my machine crash.
That is cutting-edge, though.
It doesn't feel cutting-edge. It just feels a bit prettier.
Well, they just kind of made it up.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But if it's going to crash anyway, you might as well crash with... cool new stuff like PowerTop.
That's true. I like, yeah.
What's happened to Wayland? Is that going to be an 11.10 or what?
Probably not for another year at least, surely.
Ubuntu was supposed to be moving towards it pretty soon. Yeah. But I don't know, I guess we'll have an update on that in a while.
I wonder if that's...
There was nothing about it at UDS, was there?
I don't know.
I don't think so. No.
But you'll be able to get Fedora 15, the full DVD version, on Linux format issue 147. Pretty cool.
The full version?
The full 3.4 gigabyte version.
Is there anything else on there?
Sorry, Andrew.
Oh, and six other distros as well.
How are you going to fit them all in?
I'm going to use one side of the DVD for some stuff and the other side for other stuff.
A double-sided DVD?
A double-sided disc, yeah.
That must be like 4 and a bit gigabytes of stuff.
Well, yeah, for some reason Fedora's DVD release is 3.4 gigs. I don't know why they don't use up the full 4.3, but that's their choice. But it's many gigabytes of Linux.
Awesome.
Which is cool. Moving on, the Linux kernel version number might jump to 2.8 or 3.0 soon. This was according to a message posted by Linus Torvalds. He said, "The voices in my head tell me that the numbers are getting too big. I may just call the next release 2.8.0. Then later on in this discussion, he said, "So I'm toying with 3.0. And in that case, it really would be 3.0, not 3.0.0. The stable team would get the third digit rather than the fourth one. There's also the timing issue. Since we no longer do version numbers based on features, but based on time, just saying we're about to start the third decade works as well as any other excuse. But we'll see."
But John and I were talking about this before, and really version numbers when it comes to the kernel are completely irrelevant. So we put importance on it because we're all used to the idea of new features going into a new version number, so we get excited by it. But when you actually look at it, and when you've looked at it for the last few years, you know, it doesn't make any difference. I think for marketing reasons and for all that kind of publicity it'll generate, why not push it to 2.8 and then have 3.0 next year? Let's just pretend.
Unless it puts some people off having a 0.0 version number. 3.0 could be seen as too bleeding edge, too fresh, too untested.
Make it 3.2.
Well, yeah, make it 3.1.4.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but I think some managers do. I don't know if it was Windows NT that the first release was 3.1, just because it sounded better than 1.0.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm sure some other big old school Unixes have adopted a similar system where they like to have inflated version numbers because it feels reassuring to a manager who doesn't really know a lot about software. You're not going to buy something that's 1.0.0, but if it's 4.14, it's obviously gone through a lot of revision and a lot of testing. But of course, I remember the days when we used to have stable and unstable kernel versions. We had the 2.3 series and the 2.5 series that you weren't supposed to use unless you were elite hacksaw. While the stable series was continuing, and then you'd get a massive change when 2.6.0 came out and all the new features would be there for everybody to use.
Yeah, like plug and play USB.
And some features were backported to the stable kernels from these unstable branches. And we've kind of got rid of that now, and the kernel just trundles along and it's still very reliable.
The Inkscape people should really take a leaf out of that book.
They should just call it 1.0 now.
Yeah.
It's just ace already.
It's just a missed opportunity. I mean, it's different with the kernel because, as you say, what people who are interested in the kernel need to know is the fact that this version is more recent or more stable.
Yeah.
And when it comes to
useful as diagnostics as well.
So yes, yeah.
Like
yeah.
knowing which version of wireless drivers are in which kernel and...
But when it comes to a desktop tool like Inkscape, especially as it's cross-platform and it's brilliant, you know, how do you explain to a Windows user that it's only 0.48? You know, it doesn't
make any sense. Waiting for it to get to 1.2. Yeah, yeah. Like, well, it's probably not stable enough.
I'm sure it hinders the adoption. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's an interesting. It's a bit of a side story, but there's a game that's been in open beta for 6 months. I can't remember what it's called. But but you can buy it.
Minecraft?
No, it's oil and something. It's a RTS, I think. But I've been holding off reviewing it because it's still beta. Mm. But the guys who are developing it said they've been really disappointed by the uptake on it because not many people have actually bought it. And now they're thinking about whether they should carry on doing it at all. And it's like, I'm not prepared to review it until it's like version one. Why should we? But at the same time, they're really saying, actually, the game is fully functional and people should be buying it now. So what do you do? It's 0.6. That's what it's at. And yet... Yeah,
that's a very good point because, we make a policy that generally we don't review beta stuff. We wait for the final version. So that's hindering them. They could get a lot of exposure in our magazine.
Yeah.
I mean, Maybe they're trying to think they're cool and hip, like Google has 20 million products in beta, a lot of which are actually used. Google Mail was in beta for years while we were still all using it. And we thought it was great back then.
Well, yeah, you can do that when you're the world's biggest brand.
Yeah. But not when you're a small independent game company.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And also, talking about version numbers, MeeGo 1.2 has been released with QML application framework and extended Qt mobility APIs. There's the Netbook UX 1.2 complete set of core applications for netbooks and the in-vehicle infotainment IVI UX 1.2.
Do they use the word infotainment?
Yes.
That tells us all we need to know about MeeGo, and we can now move on to Discovery of the Week.
Thanks for saving us from more talk on MeeGo. Actually, I should give it a go. it's that time again. It's Discovery of the 2 weeks.
Cool.
You all right, Effie?
Yeah, I'm all right.
How's your phone?
Oh, yeah, that's my discovery. That is my discovery.
Effie's got a new phone.
Yeah.
It's really powerful by the looks of it.
That looks. I'm almost blinded by the shininess.
The shininess of it. Yeah, my discovery is... for ages, I've been thinking to get a smartphone. Yesterday, I took the plunge and I went to the shop and got myself my first smartphone, and I got obviously an Android smartphone. Now I thought that because of all the popularity of iPhone and da-di-da-di-da and how happy the users are with their iPhones and how cool they think they are, I always assumed that Android wouldn't be that responsive, and I'm pleasantly surprised. I think it's a really cool operating system on a mobile phone.
So you were being deliberately counterculture by not going for the iPhone.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I suppose the phone has a lot to do with the performance of the operating system on the phone, whether it was a fast processor, da-di-da-di-da. But I'm really happy with it. So I think we should have more Android features, related features on the magazine. Yes. From now on.
It's a good idea.
Please. So I can learn more about it.
Oh, that's just because you want to go to the photo studio with a bunch of phones, isn't it?
That's why.
Sit around drinking coffee.
Just playing with them. But no, that's my discovery. I think it's really cool. I can't understand why I've been living without a smartphone, specifically this type of phones, really. So all this time I had a really rubbish mobile phone.
Wow, now you can tweet while you're late.
So there you go, that was my discovery.
It's a pity it doesn't say Linux on it.
It's a pity, yeah. It's a pity.
We talked about this last time or the time before.
Definitely the phone should be branded with, I don't know, powered by penguins or something like that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Perhaps the next time we run some stickers in the magazine, we should make some special stickers that you can put on phones, like thin, small stickers. You put on there saying powered by Linux.
That's a brilliant idea. Yeah.
I've got another discovery.
Cool.
I'm doing a course on Leonardo da Vinci, and I discovered that he was left-handed. No, that's not amazing, but that he wrote from right to left with inverted letters.
Whoa, what a
madman.
Yeah,
did he have to read it?
Mirror
with,
writing.
Yeah, I heard about
really?
This.
Yeah.
What, did he write in a mirror?
No, he actually wrote. He was left-handed, so as a right-handed person, you write from left to right. Yeah. And it's a natural thing. So for left-hander,
he was writing a reflection.
He was writing a reflection of the letters.
Wow.
So respect to him. But he had the ability to write from left to right on a normal sort of manner with the left hand.
Why aren't we taught that stuff at school?
I don't know. I got no clue. That's something to put to your
that's important
educational authority.
Yeah. But you know all about the Norfolk 4-course crop rotation system, though, don't you? No. Sadly, we might have been taught it, but I was at the back of the class. Norfolk's very flat.
Presumably, then, if Da Vinci were to use GNOME 3, he'd find the activities which have been in the top left really annoying.
I haven't used GNOME, but if he was using Unity, he'd probably have the same problem.
Yeah.
There awesome. You go.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Effie.
Anytime.
Mike, you got anything?
I've got two. The first one was a great website. The first one was a great headline I saw on the BBC website. There's been a lot of talk about the level of cuts that have been made to public spending in the United Kingdom. And this headline was, "Cuts will damage physics in the UK." I thought George Osborne messing around with gravity. Bang out of order. You know, there's a lot of debate to be had about these, but I think when you start messing around with magnetic waves and things, I cannot support that. So that was a shame. And I've been a bit too busy doing management training to use Linux much in the last few days, but I came across yesterday a
Gantt chart application.
I'm going to make one of them. Does anybody remember the game Pushover on the Amiga ST PC SNES in the early 90s? It was a dominoes game. You controlled a little ant and you pushed dominoes around on a series of platforms.
No.
I'm just looking at Graham here.
No, sorry, I don't.
Mm. Well, I remember playing it back on the Amiga in the early 90s. I think it was released by Ocean. And someone's made an open source remake of it.
Ah.
But I don't know how you describe it, really. It's kind of like a strategy game in that you are standing in an environment, 2D environment, like a platform game with a load of dominoes. And you've got to push one to set lots of other ones off until you hit a target domino. But it's more exciting than the real life version because some dominoes can explode and I think some could teleport and crazy stuff like that. So it was like 18 years ago since I played it. But it's pretty good that there's an open source remake.
Oh, cool.
I think I can remember the adverts. I don't think I ever played it because the dominoes rings a bell.
Yeah, I can't remember how I got hold of it because I didn't buy it. It must have been in one of those packs that came with like the Amiga 600.
What, a jiffy bag that was sent through the post from your friends.
From Jeremy Ford's piracy shop.
John?
This morning in the Metro, there's an interesting article. Apparently, some university researchers or something got some random old people and young people and generally computer illiterate people of all ages and sexes and genders. Anyway, the point was that they got them to follow a tutorial to hack a Wi-Fi network. And they could do it in less than 15 minutes.
Really?
And they got them then to do a man-in-the-middle attack and steal their fellow trial people, you know, following the tutorial's details. And these complete amateurs with no technical knowledge were able to do it in less than 15
brilliant.
Minutes.
That's excellent.
Do you know what tools they use?
I don't. But apparently the videos they followed were just video tutorials online, presumably YouTube, so...
Do you think they were guessing default passwords or...?
No, I don't think... I think they were doing man-in-the-middle attacks and doing packet sniffing and injection and stuff like that.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool.
I didn't think it could be done in 15 minutes with like a WPA encrypted connection.
I looked into this a little bit after seeing it this morning. Apparently, if it's PSK encrypted, so if the, PSK was pre-shared key, the WPA is quite crackable.
Wow.
Other forms of WPA are less so. But, yeah. So,
that's worth looking into, actually.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I'm scared now.
Yeah. Cool, thanks, John.
No worries.
Shall I do mine? I've got a couple. Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? just let me... okay, my first one is a KDE thing that I never realised. I don't know when it was added, but it's battery naming in KDE. When you select a load of files in Dolphin, say, and press F2 or right-click and then choose rename, you can... It comes up with new file, then a hash... And the hash is the number of the file in the order that you selected it. And so you can rename all the files you've selected to, say, Linux format. The hash will be replaced with 01, and then you can put .jpg or whatever it happens to be. It's really convenient. And battery naming for files is awkward, and it's the first time I've actually seen it built into an OS.
That sounds as if it's been done really, really well.
Yeah, it is actually really nice.
I get the feeling if I used KDE more, I would actually start to really love it. It's just applying all that time to switching everything around how I'd like it. But the more I hear about all these little features in KDE, I think could be my ultimate desktop.
The only problem with it is there's no undo. So if you mistakenly forget one of the files, say the first one, then the second one becomes the first one and it's a pig to actually recover from that.
Oh, man.
But, and my second discovery is a bit... audio geeky music specific, but it's that there's a device called a Monome, which is a press button thing that you can program to make noises. And the most popular application for the Monome is called MLR. Lots of people use MLR to make music. It makes kind of glitchy loop-based music that's very, very good. Probably the most popular guy who does it is called Daedalus. But anyway, it relies on you using Max MSP, which is a Windows and OS X only application. Actually, it's a fantastic tool. And Pure Data is a very close approximation to it for a free open source version. But some great Linux guy has written an equivalent of MLR in C. And it works brilliantly on Linux. He's developed it all on Linux. It's called Rove, R-O-V-E. And it just sends raw data to the serial port. So you don't even need a monome. You can actually build a box of buttons out of an Arduino and create the whole sequencer in, create a whole music compositional thing in a self-contained box running embedded Linux on an ARM CPU if you wanted to.
Cool.
Which is really, really good if you're into geeky press button, make noise music. That's my second discovery. Andrew?
Those are good discoveries. I like those discoveries. I've got three. But the first one is...
It's not quantity.
The first one is about IRC. So I'm going to leave that.
Until
we talk about the relevant section. Another story in the newspaper that I saw last week. Apparently, Apple's sales have been consistently above PC, in inverted commas, you know, PC sales, if PCs are a homogeneous block. But there's the statistics had a breakdown of, for the last few years, and then a breakdown of what sectors they're being sold into. So for home users, Apple are doing really well. But also, their sales are up compared with PC sales in the business and local government sectors. What on earth? What on earth is my council tax doing paying for MacBook Pros? This is absolutely bonkers.
Now, but you see, maybe it costs less to support them in the long run.
I doubt it.
The build quality of those machines is very good, whether people like Apple or not.
But they're good build quality, but if you look at all the statistics about most reliable over 3 years, Apple aren't the top. Asus Toshiba come out above Apple. Apple come third or fourth.
You could buy three machines for that one MacBook.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like, there's no way most of these local council people need the power of a MacBook Pro or even a MacBook. They can get by on far less than that for their office work.
Exactly.
Totally agree. And that is pretty awful.
That's something that we should look into in that their magazine that we do.
Yes.
Possibly by writing some words about it.
It's a good idea.
Sounds like some serious journalism. We better not
don't
do
that. Say that. Let's not do that then in that case.
Let's go to the pub instead.
My other discovery was, I don't know how you would categorize it, but last night I tried to put Windows 7 on to VirtualBox.
After all you've said.
I know. But then what does he know of Linux who only Linux knows?
But hang on, the only reason anybody would ever want to use Microsoft software is to run Frontier, but you can already do that in DOSBox.
I was doing that in DOSBox while I had
excellent.
While I was waiting for the files to load. I started at about 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock yesterday, thinking, yeah, it'll take half an hour or so. It finished at 8:10.
Really?
And then it didn't work. So my discovery is Windows 7, don't bother.
Wait for Windows 8.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks guys.
All right, and with such Windows-hating fun, we come to the halfway point of this podcast. Still to come, You Dare Us, Speak Your Brains, and of course, the Open Ballot. Stay tuned.
Great, so now it's time for You Dare Us, which last 2 weeks was actually, it went fantastically. We arranged to have an IRC meet with any of you listeners who cared to join us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great fun. We all really enjoyed it.
It was one of the best You Dare Us's I can remember. I mean, it wasn't much of a dare, but it was good fun.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, yeah, I thought the same thing until I actually got to the channel. There were 68 people there. And I thought, okay, now we have to be careful.
And not swear too much.
Yeah. But it was great fun. It had the problem that all IRC chats have when everybody's getting involved at once and it just bursts into activity. There were loads of conversations going on. Effie was speaking Italian or something to someone else and something. But
Are there any threaded clients?
What, in terms of they could thread messages if you prefix them with a username and a colon? That would be a really interesting idea.
You know, I'm thinking like Gmail.
Yeah, that would help, wouldn't it? Or if it color coded messages to new people, so that the green messages are just Effie and that guy speaking Portuguese, and then everything else.
Because I've not used IRC for a long time.
Nor have I.
So I hadn't, I haven't looked into IRC clients again. But since doing that, and since feeling really good about it, and serves a genuine purpose that I don't think anything has quite replaced it. I don't have a Facebook account, so I suppose a Facebook wall is kind of similar. But, the fact that it's instant and everybody's there and it feels social and, we all have something in common, it was good.
It was good. I really, really enjoyed it. It was fun.
I think hats off has to go for the bloke who wrote in saying that he was in a pub beer garden with a pint of beer and free Wi-Fi.
I suddenly felt really, really jealous. Let's do that next time we hold one of these.
Are we going to do it again?
I think we should at some point.
I think we should think of some sort of agenda, though.
Yeah, or make it a little less chaotic. My brain did feel like it was going to explode.
Because we were on there. Mike was on there for like 2.5 hours. We were all on there for a couple of hours.
I joined at 3, and then when I left to go home at 5:30, I stopped the login. I put the log up on Tux Radio, as everybody's probably seen. The next time we do one, perhaps we'll say, right, we're going to have an hour or 2 hours and we're going to chew over this topic, Unity or the future of X or Y or whatever.
That's a brilliant idea. I think we should definitely do it. Maybe do it once a month until everybody leaves. Yeah.
I mean, it's good to chat about what the best kind of tea is.
Yeah. Mm.
Obviously.
Maybe we should have a less Linux-related conversation.
Yeah.
Discuss what kind of tea the Queen drinks.
Or maybe have a timeout. We have an hour talking about a Linux subject.
Yeah, nice,
and then
suddenly
I put in like an ASCII line and then say, right, it's timeout. It's 5 minutes talking about tea.
I like that idea.
And then I wouldn't want to.
No?
If someone told me now is the time to talk about tea, I wouldn't want to talk about tea.
It just has to come impulsively, does it?
Or we could take suggestions. People can immediately vote on it, what they want to talk about.
Yeah, until people start introducing bots to vote for them.
What client did you use?
XChat.
Any good?
Yeah, it's really, really good. I don't use many advanced IRC features such as DTC file transfers or anything like that. I used to use IRSSI or IRC or however you pronounce it.
What,
back
the command
in the day.
Line?
Yeah, the NCursus client, which is fantastic. But XChat, because I don't use IRC that often, XChat works well. What did you use?
I used Conversation with a K. Actually, it was very, very good. What I liked about, I think XChat has a default list of servers, so you don't actually have to do much, do you? You just
double click free node.
That's right. And Conversation didn't have that. I had to add the server, download the list of groups, which is a bit annoying when that you're going to do that every time.
Well, you could perhaps set up some shortcuts, typing /server, javafreenode.net.
Considering that's all the application does. But in terms of Conversation, it was great. And I liked it when somebody actually set up a private chat with me. It came up in a separate tab behind the main chat window, all automatically.
Same here. I had people starting private chats with me for some reason in XChat.
Yeah. Asking you which of your pictures is the most clear.
I used to use Copeat, because I use Copeat every day for instant messaging. And Copeat used to have an IRC plugin that was convenient, and I'd stay logged into Hash Linux format or whatever. But it seems like that plugin's gone.
Oh. Has nobody else taken Degville, then, the username on Freenode?
I think I used to have Degville registered on Freenode, but it has been 5 years. So who knows? It might not be there.
Does anyone still use instant messaging?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I use Copeat mostly with Jabber Google Talk.
Right. I've stopped using that now. I just realized, just as you said, I realized I haven't used instant messaging for ages.
Well, I don't use a client, but I use the thing built into Google Chat I never really feel like setting up a program or anything, but occasionally I'll just see somebody yesterday started instant messaging me on Google Chat asking how many Kit Kats I eat a day, which was nice. But yeah, that's all I use it for.
I've got, maybe it's a generation thing, but I have got friends that we've always used it and we're still always on there.
Despite we used to use it a lot, but I think none of my friends are on there anymore. I guess they all use Facebook.
They're not your friends anymore.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Facebook has replaced it. But also job places where you work, some people can be a bit tight on running instant messaging. And
right, yeah.
Everyone I know is mostly sat somewhere in a random office with instant messaging quietly enabled in the background.
I too use XChat, and it's the best IRC client that I've ever used.
And the only one?
Yes.
Excellent.
Such a strange experience.
Is it the one that I used?
Yeah, I think it was the one that you used, yeah.
The one built in Ubuntu.
Maybe we should do a roundup. I don't know how much difference there is between the most popular ones, if any of them do threaded conversations, for example. I don't know, but it was great.
Yes, just like Twitter, but with fewer updates from Diane Abbott.
Is she still following
She's
you?
She's still following me, yeah.
Excellent.
So, sorry,
Mike, by the way, I wasn't speaking Italian or Portuguese.
It sounded like it.
It was German.
Oh,
but you didn't understand it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your German's rubbish, Mike.
It's because I'm from Bavaria, you see. It's
Boarish. I'm from Hanover.
So for this episode, we need a new You Dare Us challenge. Don't worry. For a change, this is great. We actually have had suggestions.
Oh, wow.
Not only were there some suggestions in the IRC chat, which we're going to make a note of and get to later, but earlier in the last 2 weeks, Alan Pope emailed us with a couple of really fantastic suggestions. And I think we're going to do one of those. Oh, I haven't told anyone about this. They may chase me out of a room with pitchforks.
No.
But I think the plan is, he suggested that we each find a bug in a program or distribution, report it, try and get it fixed in a forum or report it upstream or whatever, see how we get on and report on our experiences of getting support and getting a problem fixed in Linux land.
That sounds good.
It does sound like a good
challenge.
Idea. But Mike's not going to be here next week, so it doesn't give him much time to do it.
Oh, I'm sure I can find some bugs in the meantime. Anyway.
I'm sure Mike can find some bugs, yeah.
I'm sure I've got some old bug reports I submitted, so I can just look at those.
Okay.
Yeah.
I won't be able to do it.
Why not?
Why not?
Do you use flawless software all the time?
Absolutely.
No, I think that's a great idea, because you get to see how different communities respond to bug reports. As I was saying to John the other day, when we were talking about bug reporting, and perhaps arguably one of the best ways to submit a bug report is to say that this cannot be fixed. Or
Linux is terrible.
Or Linux has a problem. This was based on something I read ages ago when somebody said, if you've got a problem with like a distribution, go onto the IRC channel and say, Linux is rubbish, Windows is better because Windows can do A and Linux can't. And you will get loads of people just out of wanting to support Linux and their dignity coming to your rescue. If you just say, oh, I've got a problem with X, you might get ignored. But once you say, oh, Linux is terrible, and people are like, no, it isn't. I can prove to you. Here, type in X, Y, and Z, and it'll be fixed.
But if that was a secret, you just spoiled it.
Well, now everybody will be doing it, and the internet will be even more full of trolling.
It is a good idea. Just the other day, I was chasing something that was going wrong with my system, and I found someone who'd reported the bug, but it was an Ubuntu problem, not a GNOME one. And the person had reported the bug on GNOME's bug list. And he'd apologized at the beginning, saying, I don't know if this is the right place to do it, but I've got a problem with this, blah, blah, blah. They had a few chats with other people, and then somebody said, this is not a GNOME problem, it's an Ubuntu problem. Take it to the Ubuntu team, and it's just so unfriendly.
Oh, I might have to find a Glibsy problem and report it to Ulrich Dreber. He's always a right laugh. Well, good luck, folks. Yeah, I'll be waltzing around in the Tatra Mountains while you guys are sorting this out. So,
awesome.
Have fun. Okay, Speak Your Brains. This is that awesome section where you get to email mike.saunders@futurenet.com with Speak Your Brains in the subject line, and we'll read out your thoughts and discuss them. We had three this time since the last episode.
That sounds manageable.
It was
great.
Is
that an improvement on last time?
It's about normal, but one of them was, as usual, far, far, far too long. Please, folks, when you email in, bear in mind we're going to read these out, so they cannot be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of words.
Why are they long, do you think? Is it because somebody's given the... somebody has been given the opportunity to complain or say something, so they just go on and on.
I think, yeah, perhaps people start off thinking they're just going to write something and they just want to get it off their chest. That's fair enough, but if you think about us reading it out, because some people send some good stuff in, and I don't want to brutally edit them and chop them to pieces. Yeah. So
maybe we should create a vent your spleen section on tuxradar.com. Just put them up there.
That's the comment section, really, isn't it? Okay, let's get started with the two we've got then. Bulyongo Theory says, can we as a community try to raise funds for the GIMP? I personally think it's the most underrated, awesome piece of software out there. Last year, I eagerly awaited the now infamous 2.8, which alas didn't make it, and it seems we have to wait for even longer. I think if we can plaster enough advertising about GIMP out there, we can try and either raise some funds for development of much-needed features like CMYK and the like. The GIMP is honestly awesome, and I use it for work, and I believe a lot of floss freely but open source software designers and developers use it too. I think all we need is some publicity for the project. What's yours and the rest of the team's take on this?
Certainly the GIMP is deserving of money, but I wouldn't want, you know, £10 payable to Mr. GIMP showing up on my bank statement.
Yes. The name is still a problem, I think. It's a bit hard to for people to take it seriously.
I don't think the GIMP's got any full-time developers anymore, has it? Maybe,
is it really
maybe
not?
One, yeah.
That's sad.
It's been a while since I looked at it, but certainly a year or two ago, I think they were in real difficulty going to things like LibreGraphics.
Mm. Right.
And maybe it's got even worse with 2.8 not actually happening.
The thing that always strikes me is for some high-profile flagship pieces of free software like Firefox and GIMP and Inkscape and LibreOffice, it's marketing that's really holding them back. If you look at what Mozilla did with Firefox and the New York Times advert, that was a great piece of software that people could put on their Windows machine straight away so they could get a good introduction to free software. And the GIMP needs the same thing. Perhaps some interface designs, a different name, a really polished website that makes it look cool.
The thing about Mozilla, they were really lucky in their product. They had a genuine income stream.
And they had money.
Yeah, because they had money coming in, like from Google, DevSearch. They made a lot of money. Yeah, so they can do that, but I don't know about...
What about maybe each of the main distributions adopt a project?
That would be fantastic.
They can lend their expertise and maybe some of their developer time to a project. So maybe Fedora adopts GIMP.
Yeah.
Maybe Ubuntu adopts something else.
I would love that, yeah. You know. Instead of Ubuntu and people going off and writing brand new interfaces that just splits everything.
That's one of the best ideas ever.
Yeah, that is really fantastic. We can do that. We could start a movement. Yeah, we could...
Yeah. But that's brilliant. People love that kind of stuff. People like getting cards where they say you've adopted a kitten somewhere on the other side of the planet. So why can't we extend that from kittens to software projects?
Do you know, like with that folding at home thing where you used to have teams and it used to show how well a team was doing. You could have this as a central website with each distribution having a team.
Yeah.
And like users, how much funds they contributed and like showing. It would be fantastic. I love this idea.
And you know, it would be good feedback. It'd be good promotion for the distros as well. If Fedora took on GIMP and then they put Fedora logo in the GIMP splash screen.
Of course,
other distros would be a bit picky to take it out. So
not if they were involved in the sponsorship thing themselves.
Yeah, I think this is fantastic.
Yeah.
After we finish, I'm going to go and start the website. So
okay, excellent.
We fixed everything. Let's go to the pub.
Hang on, just thinking about the game. If supposing game could get the developers team can get some help and some financial assistance to develop the software to get all the features that are missing, such as CMYK. So just thinking about the repercussions of the commercial repercussions of that, it would be a direct, being such a great tool, be a direct competition to Adobe.
Yeah.
Now, there's been a few softwares in the past that were in similar situation at the GIMP, and they were bought by either Micromedia or by Adobe, and basically they were gone. They were completely eradicated from the scene. If the GIMP gets that good, wouldn't that be a risk of being, I don't know, alienated by a bigger divine.
It's open source. Adobe, there's nothing to buy. Adobe, if nobody's working full time on it, there's nothing to buy.
They could buy the brand.
They could buy the brand, but...
But that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, but then somebody
else... buy the GIMP brand, they'll be doing us a favour.
Yeah. But somebody else could release it because the source code has to be released. It's a bit like OpenOffice, you know, Sun controlled OpenOffice. A lot of people weren't happy with that when Oracle bought it up, so they released LibreOffice. So even if Adobe could manage to buy out the lead GIMP developers and take them away and make them work on something else, the community would just take the source code, set up Free Image Edit 2000 or something with a better name, and just carry on work with it. So it cannot happen.
But that, I mean, that I suppose that clarifies everything. But I think the plea for help for GIMP, you should apply for Inkscape and other desktop publishing software, open source software, because as a graphic designer, you just can't live with just one single piece of software. You have to have the complements. So if that's going to be the case just with the GIMP, it should be the case with Inkscape and, I don't know, Scribe.
That's a very important point, yeah, because Adobe sells on the strength of that. All their tools are ostensibly integrated, so you buy the Creative Suite. If Inkscape and Scribus and GIMP worked better together, more integrated, then they could be sold as a complete graphic designer
especially if say for instance someone can develop the CMYK facility in
so did GIMP not get GIMP. CMYK in the end?
No, it hasn't got it yet.
Because they were talking about that years and years ago.
Absolutely.
And that never happened.
And that's what I mean. If they have that chance of adding that feature on the three softwares, I can see all graphic designers rethinking what they're going to do in the future 2 years of their careers.
Especially
stick to Adobe, or there's this free Creative Suite available for me, and I can do exactly the same as I can do with Adobe, the Adobe Creative Suite.
Also, for people learning graphic design and anything, you know, free software is so much better an option. When you're paying £9,000 a year in tuition fees, you're not going to be paying
out... £8,500.
Yeah, you're not going to be wanting to pay out another couple of thousand on Adobe Creative Suite. Or
maybe you just become numb to all the money and say,
just keep spending.
Get in debt, yeah.
I don't think it's all that much, you know, because my fees at Westminster School were £27,000 a year, so going from there to only £9,000 a year is a bargain. Absolute bargain. I don't know why people are complaining. Paupers.
Especially with your salary today.
They should try Eton.
So the next Speak Your Brains is from Whom says, I want to express my annoyance at games developers largely refusing to target Linux. In the past year or so, buyers of the Humble Indie Bundle have consistently shown that not only is there a market for gaming on Linux, but also that we're prepared to pay well. For each bundle, the average payment from a Linux user has dwarfed those from Mac or Windows users. What more proof is needed? Indie developers have got really good at this over the past few years, with developers like Introversion and Basilisk Games releasing their games on all three platforms. If they can manage it, why can't the bigger and more resourceful developers do it? It's particularly irritating that Valve now supports Mac on their Steam service, but not Linux. If they already support Mac, it should be almost trivial to support Linux too. Like many people I know, I only have a Windows install for gaming. If I could play all the games I want on Linux, there'd be no reason for Windows on my PC at all.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Absolutely no dissent here.
Yeah, but
it's been shown time and again that, you know, when there is a market there, and developers just seem to don't want to tap into it. Like, they don't want our money.
Especially Steam. I mean, Hugh's exactly right. I mean, the games that they've converted for OS X, so whatever the orange box is, or Portal, for example, it's probably just a simple recompile. I mean, I think it's even easier to develop stuff for Linux than it is for OS X.
Yeah, but you've got to think of support and packaging it up then, haven't you? If you release
not through Steam.
Yeah, but even the Steam client itself, if you've got a market you're trying to target that's 1-2% of the overall market, and then it fluctuates every 6 months radically.
Be a static binary, and it'd just be a complete closed box.
Just like you get the Skype binary.
Yeah,
but I don't know how long those Skype binaries survive for. When things like log files can just go missing from one release to the next, you've got to factor all these things into your support costs. I don't think we should make the assumption that all these big games companies are just dumbasses. They will have done some research into this market.
And I think
if they can make money, they would make money. They're not just ignoring it out of some anti-Linux drive.
I think for big games developers, yes, I can see why they don't choose Linux. It's a tiny percentage of their potential market. They're much better off developing a new game for Windows.
Yeah.
But when most of the effort has already been done for things like Steam and for some other applications that maybe run OS X. I think they're missing an opportunity to spend a little bit more developing for Linux and getting lots of rewards for doing so.
With the Humble Indie Bundle, he said the average donation of a Linux user was higher than a Windows or a Mac. But what was the overall amount of donations from each like? Does anyone know that?
No, I don't know. And that's another point, isn't
it? That would be interesting because, you know, the average might have been huge, but only five people might have actually donated.
Yeah.
No, but I can't remember the exact figures, but I'm fairly certain that more people bought the Linux version than the other two versions.
Really? Yeah. So actually the overall donations were higher from Linux?
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Or it was 50% or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, so it was not like it's a small market for indie games. It's an equal market to the other major platforms.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and that game that I was talking about that I can't remember the name of previously, Oil and War or something, I'll find it and put it in the notes. I think they've had 900 or 800 pre-orders and 500 of those are Linux users.
Really?
Cool. So Linux users are desperate for games. Interestingly, I think Introversion released a game a year or two ago that they didn't release a Linux version of. Can't remember what it was. It was some like an online multiplayer version of, I don't know, Darwinia or something. But yeah, that's sad. So they've obviously found that Linux isn't profitable for them, despite the fact that they've always made Linux support a massive, massive part of their company's philosophy.
Right, well, yeah, if they've gone backwards then yeah, I think a lot more companies have done research into this than we give credit for. And if a company isn't supporting Linux, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not aware of it. You know, any decently agile company will check out all the markets. But I'd love there to be more games on Linux as well. But we've always got to bear in mind it's 1-2% market share and it's a very fluctuating platform. You can try and get around that with static binaries. But, you know, you've got the way the X server works changing all the time as well. And every 6 months, people do a big distro upgrade and things. You have a lot more to support. There are a lot of different platforms to support than just Windows or Mac. So thanks for that, listeners. We'll try and keep Speak Your Brains going. If anybody else wants to get in touch, email mike.saunders@futurenet.com. Speak Your Brains in the subject line, and you will be famous. We guarantee it.
Should GNOME become Linux only?
That's the question we asked. That's the question we asked in our open ballot this fortnight. And most people said no.
That's good. I think that's...
Yeah. There was one particular really good thread on here. One of the first commenters, Carposk, said, "I find this new thought very MS-like when all they support is their own systems." And this sparks off all sorts of responses. And Anonymous Penguin, but with a zero for the O.
Oh.
Yeah. Clever. Said, "Microsoft makes Office the company's second biggest money generator for another platform, Mac OS. Your argument makes no sense." However, Pauster2K11 said, that he thinks that Carposk was coming from the standpoint that Microsoft is very secret squirrel. he agrees with the point that he made about only supporting its own system. Look at Microsoft's cloud version of Office. It only works well with Internet Explorer, but not with other browsers. Also says, "Sorry, Microsoft, I do like some of your products and what you've done, but times
are changing."
Oh, yeah. He was 70, wasn't he, this week?
Yeah, happy birthday, Bob.
I think, I do think that GNOME should be available on as many different operating systems and different platforms as possible. But it's with KDE, the KDE team have tried very hard to create an actual Windows version of KDE, the KDE desktop. And I'm not sure I'm terribly happy with the fact that KDE 4 has still loads of bugs and still lots of usability problems when a team of 5 or 10 developers are working on a Windows version. I'd rather they develop their source code in an open and easily portable way, so that anybody who actually has the itch can simply take the source code and then convert it, rather than make it part of their mission statement.
That's the difference between GNOME and Microsoft, is that even if they only support Linux as the base OS, it doesn't mean no one can take the code and report it themselves. They're just going to focus their efforts on making it work as well as possible on their main platform. It makes complete sense to me.
There are quite a few KDE users have jumped into this, even though it's not something that directly affects them. Paul Gideon Dan says, "I think it would be short-sighted of GNOME to rely on System D. KDE learned from the whole art debacle that it's a mistake to have a hard dependency on any low-level API. Failing Whiteley says, yes, please, I can't wait until we have a system that boots as well as Linux Audio has behaved for the past few years. this comment was headed, System D, brought to you from the man who brought us Pulse Audio. although the Schadenfreude KDE user in me shouts, yes, please. Good family man, not verified.
Not verified, it's a good family man.
Won't tell you my name as I have an injunction, says, I am a KDE fan, but feel making a half-baked port of KDE for Windows or OS X is a waste of effort, given the very limited resources that open source projects have. I think focusing on Linux is a good idea in these circumstances. There is a danger of spreading oneself too thin.
I agree with that. And well, you can't force anybody to do anything. And I love messing around with BSDs, and I install new FreeBSD and OpenBSD releases in virtual machines whenever they come out. A lot of OpenBSD and FreeBSD users I see are all using leet window managers like OpenBox and stuff. They're running niche OSs for a reason, and they're not too bothered about the big fluffy desktops. And I think if this is a matter of integration, and GNOME and the Linux kernel and that infrastructure could be integrated a lot better to make a more seamless experience, that would be a good thing.
Yeah. I think you're right.
We were in the office a few weeks ago, and John had tried to install some game. And everything went kaput, and he restarted his computer, and the X server wasn't starting. Everything was just kept cycling back. And so we started in single user mode and then back to normal non-graphical mode and ran StartX, and it said no keyboards found. And when John removed this game that he'd installed, it all started working again.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
So a lack of disk space problem has stopped X working. X told us that there was no keyboards found. This is a fundamental problem with so many different layers developed by so many different people not being integrated, not being cohesive, not being top to bottom. Now, you know, projects should be free to work on their own, but if we can have some tighter integration with that, wouldn't it be great if the operating system said, hey, you're running out of disk space on the screen, instead of completely failing in a totally obtuse manner like that?
Yeah.
So if GNOME and the boot up scripts and the device managers and everything could work better together, even if that's at the expense of OpenBSD not being able to run it, because they'll all be happy with FVWM and stuff.
That's exactly, in my mind, as I've been thinking about this a bit lately, that's exactly what distributions should be doing, is they shouldn't be off developing entire desktop environments or brand new applications. Distributions are about integrating what's already there, making it work well together. So, you know, where there's those missing pieces where they relate to each other, distributions should fill in that gap and make it work as a cohesive package.
Kind of like Ubuntu used to do.
Back in the day. I guess there's only so much a distro can do before, you know, you start talking about low-level interactions between the desktop and the device system.
But that's exactly, GNOME are talking about themselves, some people anyway, as a GNOME OS. So not like doing GNOME as a distro, almost taking it all into account, which is a different
KDE
way of thinking
about it. Software Collection.
Oh, is that a similar?
That was a short-lived name change back in the day.
Right.
Oh, it's not SE anymore, is it?
No, it's just KDE now.
Oh, great.
In Kayaku reckons that BSD people strike me more as KDE users anyhow. There we go. Doxa Spiked Punch says, yes, maybe. Any effort to simplify development and, as a result, the user experience should at least be considered. And Connor reckons, if there are significant resources that could be reassigned easily to supporting these basically hobby OSs, then fair enough. He's talking about the BSDs, Solaris, macOS, things like that run GNOME.
Yeah, GNOME runs really well on macOS. Yeah. It runs as well as Pulse Audio does on Linux.
Any thoughts other than those that have been mentioned already?
Don't we have to go?
We have to go. We've done this in record quick time because there's a bunch of people with spreadsheets clamouring outside to get in.
No!
They're going to have a really important meeting about synergizing e-commerce build strategies with best-of-breed data integration and all sorts of...
Are they going to be thinking outside the box?
They're going to be thinking outside of the blue sky.
Oh, they're going to be taking the helicopter view of the situation.
Yes, exactly. If you're wasted here, you should be in senior management.
I know. My head is in the wrong place.
Your head is in the wrong place, and you're still only 3 years younger than Barack Obama. You've got time. You've got time, you can make it, and you've got fewer grey hairs than he has.
I really like your positivism about my life.
Yes, you
your
can,
enthusiasm.
Effie. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. And that that kind of wraps things up, really. Most people say, no, GNOME should not go Linux only. But I say, you know, if it did, would that be such a bad thing?
Awesome. Well, thanks, Andrew. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, wait. There's still just 13 seconds left for one more thing. Calling Mr. David Braben, could you contact me, please? mike.sons@futurenet.com. If anybody else knows David Braben, can you ask him to get in touch with me? Because we've got some really important questions about the Raspberry Pi device and black holes in the middle of the universe. Thanks.
And thanks, if anyone knows Shakira, can you get her to get in touch with me?
I know her right off. She doesn't want to. just move on, Andrew.
Anyone except Effie. Thanks, everyone. Thanks. Great podcast. We'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the next format, tuxradio.com/subscribe, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right, let's run. It's such a nice day.